was a dark, stormy night as the train rattled on. All the passengers had gone to bed, except a young man with a baby in his arms sat there with a bowed down head. The innocent one began crying just then, as though its poor heart would break. One angry man said, "Make that child stop its noise, for it's keeping all of us awake."
This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the community theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Rachel Mandenbaum in Atlanta, Georgia. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
And now, here is your WGXC information update. Today, Monday, April 15th, is the day that the first ever criminal trial of a former president of the United States begins. Donald Trump begins his trial in Manhattan about hush money paid to an actress from pornographic films. In the weather, the National Weather Service in Albany predicts that sunny skies and warmer temperatures return Monday after a few gray rainy days. And now, today's headlines. In Catskill, Porcupine Soup reports that Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger proposed a resolution this week questioning the veracity of the local 2022 elections. Linger was doing the bidding of a group called the New York Citizens Audit, who questioned the results of the 2022 election in New York and nationally. Linger offered a resolution at a County Services Committee meeting last week, but the committee voted against a proposal to audit the 2022 election results. The story does not say who voted which way, but says the measure was, and I quote, soundly defeated, end quote. Greene County Republican Chair Brent Bogardus, who serves as one of the two Board of Elections commissioners, said the allegations of any fraud were ridiculous. He said, and I quote, "There isn't a lot that Democrats and Republicans agree on at the state level, but they agree on this," end quote. In Stockport, HudsonValley360.com reports that many local residents came out for a public hearing April 11th about a proposed Dollar General store that the Town of Stockport Planning Board is currently considering. The land is currently inhabited by Indiana bats, who are listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act of 1973. Their population has shrunk by 19% since 2007. Tim Farley of Stockport said, and I quote, "I see them at night flapping around. They've acknowledged that they're imposing on the Indiana bat's habitat. The reason that they're endangered is that they don't do well when they are disturbed. They're going to be disturbed. Why would it even be allowed if an endangered species could be impacted?" End quote. Stockport resident Pick Berwick said, and I quote, "For me, the town of Stockport is small, but we could do with a nature place. I would love to see this rewilded. We're already having problems with the land. Let the land and nature do what it wants to do," end quote. In the Hudson Valley, Mid-Hudson News spoke with Mid-Hudson Library System Executive Director Rebecca Smith-Aldridge about the popularity of libraries.
Libraries are actually more popular than ever. We have over 300,000 cardholders here in the Hudson Valley, and they're doing more than just borrowing books. And I think that's surprising to a lot of people in the Hudson Valley at this point. So when you think about what is a library, a lot of people think about books, but really it's about what's inside those books. People are interested to learn more about the world around them, help their kids do well at school, make sure they understand issues they're making big decisions about. So libraries are really this fantastic kind of, we think of them as a room of requirement, where whatever you need to accomplish in your life, we either have the information, the technology, or the expert staff to help you figure out the world around you. So currently we're spending a lot of time helping people figure out what they're seeing on the internet, right? It's one thing to get on the internet, and truthfully, there's still a ton of people in the Hudson Valley that don't have internet connections or can't afford internet connections, and the library is the main place that they are accessing the internet. And then once they get on the internet, sometimes they're not so sure what they're looking at, or forms are a little more complicated than they had hoped for. So the staff are helping them navigate the online world as well as discern what they're seeing online to make sure it's true, because I think it's getting harder and harder with artificial intelligence and bad actors in the world who want to sway your opinion to figure out what's fact from fiction.
And on the mountaintop, Porcupine Soup reports that the local bears have emerged from their winter siestas and are out and about looking for food. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation last week issued a reminder to secure all outdoor food sources such as trash cans and bird feeders as the bears are ready to eat. DEC big game biologist Brendan Querion said, and I quote, "This time of year, bears are emerging from their winter dens, and over the winter they have been depleting their fat reserves. They are coming out of their dens and they are hungry," end quote. Black bears consume 15,000 to 20,000 calories per day, and an average bird feeder contains about 12,000 calories. The DEC does not recommend homeowners have bird feeders about between April 1st and November 1st. Garbage cans and outdoor grills can also be bear targets, and the DEC emphasizes that intentionally feeding bears is illegal. Querion said, and I quote, "You shouldn't be scared if you see a bear. Bears are more scared of us than we are of them. But you should be cautious. You should never approach a bear, and you should never attempt to feed a bear," end quote. He advises anyone seeing a bear to make loud noises by yelling and clapping. Loud noise, clapping, and yelling, and that, and I quote, "You don't want to surprise a bear. That can lead to the bear acting aggressively," end quote. Tuesday's events in Kingston, Wolf Eyes, Spreaders, and Glockabell perform at Tubby's in Kingston from 7 to 11 p.m. on Tuesday, April 16th. And you can tune in on Monday at 4 p.m. on WGXC, where Karen Riley hosts the WGXC Afternoon Show, live from Housatonic, Massachusetts. And this week's edition features the Ag Report from Brendan Dungan. And that's your WGXC information update. Visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, and a community calendar. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, April 15th. We are 29% of the way through the year. There are 66 days left until the summer solstice. Local early morning temperatures range from 37 degrees in Steventown to 45 in Tannersville. Regional average soil temperature is 46 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. The rain has come to an end. Today will be mostly sunny with a high of 65 at 3 p.m. Beware, some morning fog could cause some mischief, and the afternoon gets a bit windy. Overnight temperatures fall to 42 degrees. Tomorrow will be similar, sunny with a high of 65. Overnight temperatures fall to 40 degrees. Then on Wednesday, it looks like rain returns in the afternoon and we get a high of 63. Thursday, still looking moist with a high of 55. Sunset today will be at 7:22 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 392 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 152. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth! Root.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Today, we are talking to Matt Peterson and Malik Razamni about their documentary, Spaces of Exception. The film is screening on Tuesday, April 16th at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in North Central Troy. It'll be followed by a panel discussion about the film. Spaces of Exception juxtaposes the struggles, communities, and spaces of Native American reservations and Palestinian refugee camps. And today, we are joined by Matt and Malik to talk about their film. Welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Malik, can you tell us a little bit more about Spaces of Exception and include why you called it Spaces of Exception?
Spaces of Exception comes out of a longer-term multimedia research project, if you will, called Native and the Refugee. And the purpose of that project was really to try to understand and build connections as much as we could between the experiences and histories and present-day realities of Palestinian refugee camps and Native reservations in the United States. And the reason for that is that we saw that there was kind of a broad similarity between the struggles of Palestinians and Native people in terms of the centrality of the question of land. And then we also saw a similarity in terms of the spaces, the reservation as this kind of extranational space that is kind of the product of a distinct history of displacement and genocide, but is also the kind of holder of a kind of quasi-sovereignty. We felt that there was a similar kind of dynamic. I grew up myself between the U.S. and Lebanon, so I'm not Palestinian or Native, but I was able to observe from the outside a kind of similarity within these spaces, or at least in terms of how they exist within the nation states in which they're located. And so we thought if we could go inside to these places and talk to people, it might be interesting to juxtapose them. And that's essentially what the movie is. It's a series of segments shuttling back and forth between the U.S., West Bank, and Lebanon. The reason it's called Spaces of Exception, in part, is an homage to Giorgio Agamben, who speaks about states of exception. We took this kind of idea of the state of exception, which in Agamben's idea is this period of time, basically, where law is suspended and politics becomes real, which is to say that the violent apparatus which makes states possible is enacted. Law is suspended, but then in doing that, new norms are created. It's time when law and politics fuse. His was primarily concerned with a temporal or a time-based. We wanted to look at it spatially. And we can see that, unfortunately, right now in Gaza, in terms of the complete suspension of any kind of international law and the full brute force of the Israeli state being displayed. And in that, I think, unfortunately, we're going to see the creation of kind of new forms of violence that could be applied even beyond Gaza, right? And it's important to note that Gaza is two-thirds refugees. So Gaza is really a series, for the most part, of large refugee camps. So that's not totally separate from what's going on today there.
Thank you for that, Malik. You mentioned this larger project, the Native and the Refugee. And Matt, I was wondering if you could just explain how Spaces of Exception sort of fit into your broader scope of work.
Yeah, so as part of the Native and the Refugee, we started back in 2014, we started making short films and videos, and we made about a dozen of them. Most of them are available on our website, thenativeandtherefugee.com. But part of that methodology was each time we would visit either a reservation or a refugee camp, we would make basically a short film just from that one trip. And then we would have this material to show as we were continuing to travel and visit different places and communities and kind of have these discussions back and forth about the concept and the ideas. But we also did writings. We've done essays. We put out a book about the Mohawk Warrior Society. And, you know, Roger Jock, who's going to join us at the screening, comes out of that lineage. So that was a kind of deeper dive into the Mohawk experience around Akwesasne, which is one of the reservations we focus on in the film, which is in upstate New York and borders Ontario and Quebec. So it kind of spans the border of the United States and Canada, so-called. So that was kind of one deeper dive into the context of the project. We really wanted to think of it like an interdisciplinary project, you know, a research project. But the film is included in that. We made, you know, this 90-minute feature-length documentary film, which is a more kind of concise encapsulation of a lot of our research and a lot of our visits that can travel around and is, you know, serves as a self-contained event and opening for a discussion. So we're grateful that, you know, it's been screening so much, in particular the last 6 months, because I think people have been wanting to learn more about Palestine in general and the refugee dynamic and the, you know, settler colonial process. But then in the experience of that, wanting to think about colonization in the United States and North America and what are the kind of resonances between what we're currently seeing in Gaza and what we historically might have experienced or peoples might have experienced in North America. And I think that's what the film hopes to do, or the event on Tuesday hopes to kind of bring to light, is to think about those shared experiences and how do we have contemporary solidarity now with what's happening in Gaza, but then what is the kind of historic solidarity, if you will, or generational solidarity with the lands that, you know, we live on in the United States, thinking about the different violent processes that we know they happened, you know, but we're still learning about what that actually looked like or felt like, or how it was narrated in the media, how it was narrated by the government, et cetera. And I think the current and the historic, you know, in terms of Gaza and this kind of dynamic of North America is what we like to talk about, and how we can kind of bring that solidarity to light. But then, of course, you know, Native reservations still exist. They're not just this historic phenomenon. They're living communities, struggling communities, still fighting for sovereignty and self-determination. So to think about, you know, how does the solidarity exist in a contemporary way here as well? So, you know, we're grateful that Roger will join us on Tuesday to kind of hear about his work and his experiences. So, yeah, thanks for having the screening.
Yeah, and before the screening, you'll have the opportunity to do a Be the Media workshop, which goes into this idea of diving deeper into long-term media projects from 5 to 6 p.m. So thank you for doing that. And when you view this film, it really puts into context, as someone from the United States, sort of how we have our hand in funding this genocide currently in Gaza as the United States, and providing arms and looking back at our colonial history. But you don't hit people over the head with this type of information. You sort of allow people to enter these spaces, these places. And I was wondering if you wanted to comment on that approach to your collaboration.
Absolutely. Coming off of what Matt was talking about, the idea of it being a multimedia research project, part of the idea of making many of the short films, partially to show them in both spaces and to have it be a kind of cumulative process, but it was also to have, you know, different kinds of genres. So some of the films are more experimental, some of them are more propagandistic, some of them are more journalistic, some of them are more kind of a sensory kind of approach that makes you feel like you're there, and the others are more kind of discursive. But with the feature film, what we were really trying to do was do two things. One is we really were trying to avoid a didactic kind of approach where we're telling you, you know, what to think or believe, but rather we wanted to do two things. On one level, visually, we'll use cinema, sound, and vision to kind of reproduce as much as one can what those spaces feel like. And then the other aspect on a discursive level was to see what people's analysis was. So kind of talk to well-organized, thoughtful people working, living, existing in those spaces, what they think both of their situation from the point of view of the camp or the reservation, but as well as the entire struggle, right? The Native struggle or the Palestinian struggle. It wasn't so much to teach people about those spaces. It was more like to think through ideas with people in those spaces while reproducing a feeling of what it might mean to feel like physically being there. I think that, and that comes out of the fact that our work in that particular movie was supposed to reflect our actual process, because that's what we literally did. We went there, stayed there, was in that space, and talked to people there.
Excellent. So yes, the screening is on Tuesday, April 16th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Matt Peterson will be joining us. And Malik Razamni and Matt Peterson, thank you for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
We're talking today with Noreen McKee, who is with the Justice Center of Rensselaer County. And on Sunday, April 14th at 1 p.m. over at the UAlbany School of Public Health in Rensselaer, they are presenting the Robert Daugherty Memorial Lecture on Environmental Justice. So welcome, Noreen. And maybe just give us a brief introduction to, you know, what the Justice Center is and what will be happening at this lecture on Sunday.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And thank you for having us. The Justice Center the Justice Center of Rensselaer County was started in 2020. And our primary goal is to create and achieve equality by addressing persistent and structural prejudice in all of our systems, political, economic, educational, and social. We were started by a fellow by the name of Robert J. Daugherty. He dedicated his life to providing our communities with an awareness of social justice issues and fighting prejudice and racism throughout his life. He was really an outstanding humanitarian, and he was also a public servant. He was a former Troy city councilman. And so the intent of the lecture series is to call attention to these vital social issues and offer solutions. We bring in speakers to cover these subjects, such as racial discrimination, police reform, mass incarceration, and environmental justice. Last year was our first year, and we sponsored the distinguished professor and author, Dr. Peniel Joseph, out of the University of Texas. His latest book that came out last year was called The Third Reconstruction, America's Struggle for Racial Justice in the 21st Century. And we've done a few lectures in the past. Our first was with Doug Blackman, who wrote the Pulitzer Prize winning book, Slavery by Another Name. And after that, we sponsored Dr. Alice Green from the Law and Justice Center in Albany.
This year you seem very focused on environmental justice, and sort of a two-part. The first part is actually my wife, Judith Hank, from Beyond Plastics. Why are you asking her to present?
Well, we wanted to address environmental justice, and we thought it would be a good way to talk about the whole global issue of the environment. And we have right here the expert, Judith Enck, she has done an enormous amount of work to end plastic pollution. And so we wanted to bring her on board to really talk about the global issue. And then, of course, we really need to hone in on our local issues, because we have very serious environmental issues here in Rensselaer County, affecting Rensselaer County and the whole capital region. So that's kind of where we were coming from to sponsor this year's subject matter of addressing environmental justice.
Now, I'm sure Judith will be talking about the effort to reduce packaging, but the second part of the plastic packaging in particular, but the second part is Dr. David Carpenter, from, I guess, the School of Public Health, interviewing some of the lead-in environmental groups in the Capital District. You got Bob Welton for the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, does the Dunn Landfill. You got Joe Ritchie from Lysol Norlite, fighting the Norlite Hazardous Waste Incinerator. Barbara Heidenson from the Clean Air Coalition of Greater Ravina Queemans, working on a number of issues, particularly the Ravina Cement Plant. And then Greg Campbell Cohen, who's with this group called Timber, but talking about the lead pipe replacement. So what will be some of the highlights from their presentation?
Well, they are going to give us an update on all their issues. And I believe that probably the most significant one will be Lights Out, coming from Joe Ritchie of Lights Out Norlite. Plant has suspended operations, and we're not sure, at least the last time I spoke to Joe, he wasn't sure if this was the beginning of a shutdown or not. So I think we're going to have some more information on that as we address that on Sunday afternoon. The lead pipe replacement issue is a serious issue here in Troy. We've found lead in our drinking water, and there's been a movement by the city administration to replace all the lead pipes in Troy. And so we're hoping to hear that they haven't been making significant progress in that area. And certainly Bob Welton from the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, he will give us an update on the permit renewal for Dunn Landfill, and hopefully we'll have get to the point where they will not, DEC will not renew the permit. And Clean Air Coalition, we want an update. I think Barbara Heinzen will be giving us a clear picture of what is developing in that area, in the Ravenna Coeymans area. So we're very excited. Dr. Carpenter is going to moderate in the second half of the event a discussion amongst this these four environmental leaders, and he will be asking them, you know, questions, pertinent questions about the work that they do, why they do it, and the results that they hope to achieve. So we're very excited about this. We've been planning it for several months now, and Sunday is only a couple days away. So, yeah. And we're to get a fair, a good turnout. So we'll see.
Now, one of the, I guess, newer groups on this list is Timber, and they'll be talking about the lead pipe replacement. Can you give, you know, can you give us a little background on what Timber is?
Timber is not, Greg is the, he has really led the fight on replacing the lead pipes. He was the one that really brought it to the attention of the community. Timber is his organization. It's not, as far as I know, an environmental organization. He pretty much works on his own, and this has been the one area of concern that he has directed his efforts at so far.
So what else will the Justice Center for Rensselaer County be working on, both to follow up from this particular meeting, but, you know, in the coming year?
Well, we are always trying to address issues that come before us with regard to the areas that I talked about, addressing persistent and structural prejudice in our systems here. One of the primary areas that we've been involved with over the past couple of years has been police reform, making sure that, you know, our police have adopted body-worn cameras and dashboard cameras, and coming up with a policy. I believe the city is still in negotiation to come up with a policy on governance of body-worn cameras, and we've been very involved with that. We're also planning to our next year's lecture series, and we're just at the beginning of that. That is pretty much the highlight of our year, is bringing in speakers to talk about these important issues and bring awareness to the community, and not only awareness, but how we can, as members of the community, address these issues to try to solve these persistent problems that affect the quality of our lives.
So the Robert Daugherty Memorial Lecture on Environmental Justice this Sunday, April 14th at 1 p.m. It will be at the UAlbany School of Public Health, which is at One University Place over Rensselaer, New York. We're talking, well, this is Mark Dunley with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and we've been talking with Noreen McKee with the Justice Center of Rensselaer County.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
3, 4. With your head in the clouds and your heart in the mud, you clutch at the crumbs that fall. You possess, give your life any sense, say that you've been a success. And you live in the shadows, deep in the shadows, you crawl, you crawl, you crawl, you crawl. seem to grind. It's just a trick of the mind to make you believe you're alive. So you grab an ideal and clutch to its dream. It makes you feel real, so it seems. And you live in the shadows, deep in the shadows. You crawl, you crawl, you crawl, you crawl. Head in the clouds and your heart in the mud. You're clutching at crumbs, that's all. And you live in the shadows, hide in the shadows, live in the shadows, deep in the shadows. You crawl, you crawl, you crawl, you crawl.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry. Thank you.
from the 2023 album The Age of Pleasure. That's Janelle Monáe with Black Sugar Beach on WGXC.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Our bill will establish new safeguards. It'll put us on par, by the way, with virtually every other democracy around the world that also prohibits non-citizen voting.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says his conference backs legislation to require proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections. It's already illegal for non-citizens to cast those ballots, and it almost never happens, although some jurisdictions do allow it in local races. Johnson is repeating the conspiracy theory that the Biden administration is letting in millions of migrants to tip the election to Democrats. After Iran's attacks, Johnson says the House will vote on long-delayed aid for Israel. It's not clear if Johnson would let aid for Ukraine be included. The embattled speaker faces a possible rebellion from hard-right lawmakers over that. But Republican House Foreign Affairs Chair Mike McCaul says the countries face the same threats.
These rockets and these drones are being bought by Russia, and they're killing Ukrainians every day. What happened in Israel last night happens in Ukraine every night.
Under pressure from a White House concerned about a wider war, Israel has put off striking back. Israel and its allies shot down almost all of the drones and missiles, and in a historic shift, at least two Arab nations helped with that. Turnover in election officials has increased, but not as much as feared. Rachel Orrey with the Bipartisan Policy Center says more are leaving office, but the trend is slow. She says most folks in those offices still serve for more than 4 years.
So when we see a turnover in a chief election official, it isn't always the case that someone new is coming in who doesn't know what they're doing. Rather, we see more often that it is folks with lots of experience in elections who are stepping into these chief roles.
A New York Times Siena College poll finds views of former President Donald Trump's time in office have grown more favorable over time. This comes even as the former president faces an unprecedented criminal trial starting today. Republican New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu says border security and the economy are simply more important.
People are upset by January 6th. They're upset by the election denial. They have every right to be. I am. But at the end of the day, they need a culture change to get America back on track.
The Tennessee legislature has been sharply divided on gun rights for years, but a bill to let teachers carry concealed weapons in classrooms has just passed that Senate. Democratic State Senator London Lamar calls that extremely dangerous.
Teachers don't want it. The school districts don't want it. Nobody doesn't want it. It's not going to work. It's going to cause more school shootings.
Under the legislation, staff would not have to be trained in de-escalation and parents would not be informed. A quarter of U.S. teachers say their school had a gun lockdown in the past year. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The IRS has a pilot program in 12 states this year to file your personal taxes online for free without the use of third-party software. Wonder why it took so long? Big money lobbying. For 2023, taxpayers in Arizona, California, Florida, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Hampshire, New York, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming can try the free IRS Direct File, which can help prepare returns and file them online. But Money and Politics tracker Open Secrets reports a coalition of tax preparation companies spent over $90 million since 2003 lobbying Congress and the IRS to keep this from happening. A 2019 ProPublica investigation found that in order to stave off a catastrophic loss of revenue if the IRS launched its own online filing program, tax software makers lobbied to offer their free service called FreeFile to qualified Americans. While 70% of Americans qualified, this year, with a gross income of $79,000 or less, only about 2.2% of Americans actually used it, mostly because they don't know the program exists. One finance research group estimates Americans spent almost $13.9 billion for online tax prep in 2023. We have a link to ProPublica, the pilot IRS Direct File app, and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Thank you.
what you can.